to understand a person in that total setting. So you're really teaching the person about a subject. I love Greek in that it has two direct objects for the word teach. It doesn't have an indirect object and a direct object like English. But the word teach in Greek has two direct objects, the person and the subject. And it's nice because you're always aware of that fact. You're doing two things continually. And it's one of my problems with teaching as you go up the echelons, like graduate school teaching is worse than kindergarten by far at this point. The kindergarten's been doing the most on this, for that matter. And preschool, Doris has been with too. You finally get to where a person lectures, and you hand back the lecture, and as far as a person's concerned, he can be as nearsighted as Rosie Rosenthal, whom I've invited to come out here, who never knew any of his students, and John Victor on the fact that he had to go in and correct his papers and give the grades for him, because he didn't know who they were or anything. He just was up there giving his lecture. The lectures were quite thrilling, actually. He's a Marburg graduate from the Boltman School and knows his area, but not to know the person, not to be relating to him, I would hate to have to teach that way. I mean, I wouldn't enjoy it. I remember the president of our college saying when I was in college, and I certainly share it now and say it to others, that the most fun he had in being president of college was in knowing the parents and grandparents of the kids who were coming. And it is fun. And how he said, gee, what a tragedy if a Prussian go to St. Olaf or Hinderly to Luther. You know, I mean, the fact that you have sort of a tradition amongst us as to which college you go to, which particular part of the clan and the tribe you're in. And like I feel with Eric, singing today, and I was just thinking, Eric's our crew boss, Eric Anderson. His mother's a role. Her father was an exciting editor back when the really county paper editor, some of the most exciting people in America, and have the pictures of their convention, all those different people. When nobody wore beards and long hairs, they wore beards and long hair. You know, that was before it got to be popular. They were all individuals. But then you know these people, you know the Roe tribe, you know the Anderson tribe, the Brewer, his dad, his father, I've never met, but I've always felt like I knew him because the pastor with whom he was a right arm and chairman of the Board of Deacons back in days in Cottonwood is a famous parish. Rumsted was the pastor whose son is my best friend, and Dr. Osgard used to say it was the greatest parish we had. Well, you know, you think of these people and how through the generations they've been shapers of community, and you get into inside of them a little bit. That's what I'm going to talk about. My door start off, but how? What are their ways to help in getting inside as a person we're teaching? We have a terrible name for a person in our society. Can't think of a worse name for a person who's really involved in understanding persons, and that's caseworkers.
Yeah.
Awful, you know. And yet, that's what they fight against being. In Thousand Clowns, those of you who've seen the movie, there was an actual caser of all things, an origin from Minnesota, that doing casework in Brooklyn, and then runs into this fellow who's trying to treat his own son, keep him home from school. But to understand the background is the idea of the caseworker, isn't it? I mean, you know the whole context of the situation. When Norston's been up here with his whole new ecology approach to healing, which is just exactly this, when we talk about the education, Lutheran General in Chicago assigns each patient a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a doctor, pastor, caseworker. The caseworker's responsibilities know the financial background, the problems they've had, in just ordinary details of living and so on, all the other things that could add up to make a health or disease picture for this person. So that finally the doctor in charge of this particular person doesn't have a patient, he has a person. And healing can happen. And like the AMA had a delightful journal a year ago this May on just this hospital and its sauna type back rubs, you know, that nobody's proven that a back rub has any physiological effect in healing whatever, and yet unquestionably it has a great deal to do with healing because of a concern. It's a touch that cares, and what this means. Now, I'm for there, just give this for background, so you see what we were thinking about.
Well, my big concern is parish education right now. We try so hard to get teachers to teach Sunday school, but we do nothing about training them to find out what makes their children tick in church school. They see them Sunday after Sunday, but just 1 hour. And usually they start right in with the lesson. They've got to get it finished. They got to cover the material. And most church school teachers, most teachers, teach material rather than children. And it seems to me if a person's going to accept the job as a church school teacher, she should also accept the responsibility of finding out all about the children, each child in that class. It seems to me that our parish educators are just naturals for evangelism in our church, but they don't know how. In the first place, they're natural for evangelism because they can go into the home of every single child that they have in their class and be welcomed with open arms, because what parent isn't going to welcome somebody who is concerned about their child, who is trying to know their child, and who is spending time with their child? But, and so I feel that before a teacher takes a class, that there should be some training, that she should receive some training on how to go about finding out about that child. What are some of the things she should know? What kind of records to keep so that each, she knows from Sunday to Sunday the things, the significant things that have happened to that child, or the significant things that child said that particular Sunday? How can you, take a class of 10 children and remember all the little details? But if she would be able to sit down and write on that card the things that she feels are significant in making that child tick. Another reason I feel that teachers are natural for evangelism, because many families look for a church that has a good church school. They look for a church where their children will be happy. And it seems to me it behooves us to teach our teachers in a way that they will be able to show some warmth and some understanding as far as the parents are concerned, not just toward the child, but the parents as well. Know how to relate to the adults in that home and find out how many children are there in the family. Where does this particular child come? Is he the oldest, the youngest? Is he the middle child? Because all of these have significant bearing on what kind of child that is. I really feel in preschool that the most important time of that church school class is the first half hour, where the child is allowed to come in and explore the environment, where the child can seek out his own friends, seek out his own things to do, and the teacher's job is just to stand back and watch the child function, to observe, to get clues about that child's personality and the way he operates, get clues about the needs of the child. And the only way we can find out about the needs of the people, the children who come to us in church school or public school, is to listen to them and to watch them, to observe them. Okay, Carol.
No, I think this is great. And I think when you get into the home, you sense a continuity here between the child and the atmosphere that's shaping him, or the lack of an atmosphere to shape him sometimes. And it really opens you up to what can happen. I was thinking about one thing today, Doris, that made a tremendous impact on me back in my college days. I was then preaching in Chicago for $5 a Sunday, and eating actually around in the parish so that they could help me get through in the $5. But one of the women in the congregation had charge of the section dealing with Roosevelt Road down in Chicago at that time. That's before they put in the freeway. But this was, all of them 4 and 6 floor tenements with a water spigot in the backyard, and that was the water, and so on. And just reading what happened to one family situation where everybody in this family was really a cop-out, just like the book I'm reading on Rabbit Redux. It was about as bad a black situation as you could think of. But this one girl was then studying at the art school in connection with the museum in Chicago, the art museum. And her grades had been unusual, her whole productivity. And what made the difference? Why? One girl, where everybody else is a washout. A second grade teacher had somehow really made contact. That girl didn't live in that atmosphere. She didn't live in that environment. She lived in that second grade teacher. And it literally saved that girl out of a setting that you would say was impossible from a human point of view. It made possible a beautiful human being with a real future out of a situation, I mean, anybody looking at it and say it's hopeless. And this is where you think of the opportunity given all the way along, just out of visitation. I was just furious with one of our famous preachers that we had out here lecturing to the pastors of the ALC. He's from one of our other synods, but a radio personality. So he says, don't visit, it's a waste of time. You know, I was so angry, I thought of Dean Hancock that I was going to have out here the next summer to be our sort of fellow on preaching the liturgy. He was dean of the St. Mark's Cathedral, the Episcopalian Church. And just fun to see him walking the streets in our area, you know, and every afternoon, that's where he took his exercise. Died of a heart attack the spring is to come out here and discovered that he was on the all-time, all-famous soccer team for England when they had all the famous athletes back for a particular time. And that's where he got his exercise, is going house to house visiting. But what you know about people when you do that, and what you see, and when I, like one of the stories in the front page one morning, with a three-year-old hanging on a fence on a freeway out in the Los Angeles area whose parents had simply abandoned her on a freeway, screaming, hanging on a fence tomorrow, I thought, what pastor didn't visit that home? Because you come into home, you can quickly realize when a child isn't wanted, and you have a way out. I simply go to the telephone and say, no child has to grow up in a home that isn't wanted. You really mean that? I'll have another family for it tonight. And I do. I mean, I call them and said to one of my families waiting for our Lutheran girls to produce, and they're either smarter or better than other girls. I don't know whether that's true or not, or else we've got more of them waiting for them. But they at least in everything to get from our adoption agencies, and help a lawyer arranges that. They come over that same night and get the child. Child doesn't have to spend another night in an unwanted home. And this you're aware of. These are things you can do as you're within the context of this particular person. That's what pastors can do and teachers can do. And it's a terrific privilege. Like Doris says, I have yet to find, you know, when I was teaching in the science school, when I was going to school and through the seminary, it was at Central Lutheran. It was down in our slum area in Minneapolis. Still is. And just 2 years ago, they paid the village for my time while I once more went out and rang doorbells for 3 months, and they paid the village 3 months' salary, just so I get the feel of this again in a parish. And to see, these were Indians now largely, or mixed, white and Indian, white and black, and poor white, and not a home, but what wasn't, glad to receive you. Sit down, talk, come back tonight when my husband's around. If I was in the afternoon, I'd come back that night. We'd just sit there and go over this situation. They were delighted that somebody had enough interest to come. Like Doris says, and you have that opening whenever you're involved in a very beautiful way. And don't expect too much. I think this is the worst trouble. Everybody I've had working in the parish, they think they're going to have a miracle out of a visit, you know. Mm-hmm. Or you can give them the whole way of salvation in one visit, you know, mm-hmm. And so on. All you're there is to visit and tell them. And let them talk.
I think the parents of the children in the church school can do an awful lot to help that teacher. I mean, if any of you are parents, I think all through the year there should be little informal parties for the, so that these children can get to know each other in somebody's home. I know I had a breakfast for the four-year-olds one time, and it was the most delightful thing. It was during Sunday school. They parents delivered them to my house on the way to church, to Sunday school. And to listen to those children, they had just orange juice and some little rolls, and just to hear them converse with each other in that informal setting, you've got all kinds of clues as to what kind of homes they came from, what kind of personalities they had. I remember one child passed the rolls, and he said, you know, my mother says, if you don't want any, you should say no thank you, and ick, I don't want any of that stuff. But, you know, why leave it just to the teachers to do these things? Where that, I think it's so valuable for children to feel that their real good friends are in church school. If we could just work up an attitude of warmth toward the church, toward just being there, toward being in that atmosphere of love, with Christ's love shining through the members of the congregation to these children. I think we as adults owe something to all the children who are baptized in our church, to know them, to be able to call them by name, to take the time to stop and say something friendly to them when they're in church. Then you are developing an atmosphere of warmth, the kind of atmosphere we hope that all of our churches can develop. It's been interesting to go into different churches and notice the difference in atmosphere, not only toward us as guests, but toward but the atmosphere of people toward each other. And some churches are just absolutely dead. We have to say hello and, you know, shake the hands of the members of the church in order to get acquainted. I think all of us have a responsibility here as far as helping the children in our church to grow, to feel that church is a warm, friendly place, a nice place to come on Sunday.
I think in connection with this too, if you did visit a little bit more and we had more people visiting, we'd have something going that there are people who'd like to turn this into, but for us it's impossible simply because it involves trying to do too many things with the same place, but a Mutterdienst like we have in Europe, in areas close enough, and the governments over there, of course, support it. But you get into homes, you realize the child is not getting attention from the mother because the mother is just so all in that she has nothing really to overflow to the child. She maybe has three kids too quick, you know, this sort of thing. And it's one place where I think we can, as a church, help. I've been very impressed with what Central is doing here. They have an every Thursday kind of a baby care set up.
Mother's Day Out,
yeah.
They call it in our church. We had every Friday morning. Every Friday morning they can bring their children, and we call it Mother's Day Out. They, if they can afford it, they bring a dollar, which pays for materials and things that they use. And it isn't just a babysitting thing. They involve the children in learning activities and fun games and arts and crafts and that sort of thing. But the mothers can leave their children there and feel perfectly free to go on and do other things that morning.
Yeah,
these are children who aren't in school. It's these mothers who are really saddled at home, you know, 7 days a week.
And here's where I think you have sort of, I think every church has some resources here to work with them too, like for instance getting the preschool involved in drama and singing and so on. And there are mothers that you do have, or people without children, who've got gifts in this area who are glad to join this as a ministry to them. I mean, it certainly has been true for Central, and I know, like my oldest daughter, she got $100 a month from the PTA of Seattle. I said, boy, all those women with their husbands supporting them don't even know what it's about. She had to have a car at $100 a month. Never got around to paying her salary, for which she put on in 4 to 5 public library branches drama groups for preschool children every day, and just went around Seattle for disturbed kids who were in overcrowded homes and difficult home situations and so on. The PTA had taken it up there.
Well, Myron taught me an awful lot about creative drama with children here at Holden. He came in and did some exciting things.
But it's really healing. I mean, it really is restorative. We had one beautiful thing happen. Central, to me, was unbelievable because they actually asked finally. These women wanted to have a little Bible study work for themselves in connection with this. And since they'd asked for it, it was done. It wasn't pushed at them. But whether it's because in the church they felt they should or not, because most of them are Indians, although some are black, and a few are white. But it involves quite a few now. It involves close to, something like 352 or something like that. Yeah, you know, mothers unmarried with children and family mothers. And right before Christmas, of all things, their husbands oftentimes come with them. They're usually unemployed, but they'd sit out in their cars. But here, they'd ask for Christmas service in the church. And our youngest guy in the staff has the guitar, of course, for his youth work. And one of the other fellows on the staff, a very beautiful guy, a single guy with a great gift for preaching. It worked out with him to the guitar company. Just a simple story of Christmas, the incarnation song. Just beautifully done in a narrative of song. And we were just getting ready to start here in March, all these Indian men. And you know, they never go to anything, and to come to church you'd never expect them. But there we were, and Central's a huge church, but boy, there were a good 600 people there. And about 250 of them Indian men, you know, and blacks, a few amongst them. So well, it's overwhelming. We almost broke down and wept the whole bunch of, you know, the one time when they were lying. But it was Christmas, and there was sort of little give and take reciprocal there. But you could tell their appreciation of a concern. Of course, in addition to this child care, goes food and clothing and so on too. But at least there's a living, physical kind of a unit that you develop with them. And brief as it may be, it gives those children a first kind of image of the church as a place that cares.
Right.
And I think that's wonderful.
I'm sure there are people here who have had some really exciting experiences in this area. I hope they feel free to.
Now, come through with it, some of your own experiences, because I think it's thrilling to hear. How do you get to know the person that's involved with you in your particular communications of a subject.
Why do you have to?
Now, there's a good German.
I didn't hear.
Why do you have to?
Oh, my.
No, but there's a continental. See, is it necessary, you say?
You see, children come to school in order to learn something. This is something objective that's carried close to them and they have to grab. They can be made to grab, but that's about all. You're not at all interested in whether this child had any breakfast in the morning or problems with her parents or a broken home. The school is an objective here where the child is brought in to learn. And things like, my toy broke, my grandmother didn't come, do not have anything to do with the learning process.
It does? Has everything to do with it.
Depends on what you call learning, I think. I mean, it'd be your definition of learning. Is learning a subject? I mean, if you're learning mathematics, they may still be very alert, even though they're hungry, disappointed, they're scared to death of getting an F, and so they're listening, you know, this sort of fear complex for teaching. And that, of course, has worked. I mean, there's no question about it. It's taught discipline. If that's what you mean, working and disciplines and learning. I mean, I think of the Scandinavian countries, every child gets the same breakfast in the morning, so they all can compete on an equal basis. They call it the Schutz breakfast in Norway. This has been for some years. It started back in the early 30s. So they all have an equal basis. And the only people I know are people of relative wealth or considerable wealth, but boy, their kids never eat breakfast at home. They eat that school breakfast with everybody else. You know, so they have that side of the concern from the school. But you take, for instance, when Norway went out, this is why Norway went out and fought the Nazis, and the whole bunch of preachers walked out of their pulpits on the same Sunday, 93%, to back up the teachers. Because the teachers were having the problem that they couldn't get to their students anymore because the Nazis were claiming their soul while they were letting the teacher have their mind. Now, you never had that conflict in Norway. The teachers didn't fight back in Germany. They fought back in the Scandinavia. And the church backed them by refusing to operate. And the Nazi occupation lawyer said, what's the gospel got to do with this? We're not interfering with you in the church. He said, you fear the child in the classroom, you've destroyed the church. You see? I mean, it's one piece. This is the thing, one piece.
Are we just confining ourselves to public school, or are we confining, are we also?
No, the whole thing, church.
Well, the child goes to public school too. I mean, I think it should, like Carol says, it should incorporate all the child.
The one piece.
No matter where he goes and when he goes.
Betsy,
okay. I'm just wondering whether maybe Barbara was overstating it to make a point.
Well, I think she was.
Sometimes coming into the American system out of one in another country, you have a feeling that they might succeed very well as being much closer to the child and more of a counseling situation and more friendly with the child and so forth. Then you also ask the question, does that contribute
to the learning?
To their learning?
Mm-hmm. And that's a very good question.
You wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from another system, I think they may never say, but I
mm-hmm.
And also another point, it's quite all right to have 10 children in Sunday school once a week, and you talk to them, and then you make your little notes, how about 30 kids in first grade? And you're supposed to know a few more things about this. Where do you take the time as a teacher?
I think it's your priorities there, though, isn't it,
Barbara? As a mother, to go and say, I'll listen, I'll tell you just one thing about my kid. He's bilingual. Take it easy on her, this or that.
Mm-hmm.
But if every mother comes with just one little remark, that poor teacher, do you see that it is much easier to stand back, concentrate on methods, didactics, exams, and ways to teach the child, and then let something happen that's very exciting, too. But you forget about grammar and the broken song.
Maybe it's easier, but it's not nearly as much fun.
You don't know that it's not. That's
Carol,
you.
Joanne and Carol both here.
I've been preaching this last year in experimental school, and open classroom and all kinds of things that I was I was very skeptical about. And I must say that there are tremendous advantages of knowing kids on a one-to-one basis. There's no doubt about that. However, they fail on a one-to-one basis also. It's just more pleasant when they fail. One of the things that I'd like to agree with Barb here to one point, and that is that it seems to me if you get a bunch of kids around and say, maybe something to do with high school, but if you get a bunch of kids around and say, we're gonna really get to know each other and we're gonna have a wonderful time, you're not gonna get anywhere. If you don't start with some content, you've gotta have some content.
Amen.
And some exciting content.
Right.
And in the course of the content, and as you start talking to them about the content, you'll get to know them. Like it seems that the problem is how to break down the kinds of structures in our school, and that includes the Sunday school too, where you've got that terrible built-in formality maybe there's something about a European system that isn't the total picture, but an American system where you've got five periods a day or six periods a day at 35 students a crack at 50 minutes, and in a school so large that after the bell rings, you never see that kid again, mm-hmm. so that you have no feeling of time.
All right, that's 160. What's the pastor going to do when he has 700, 800?
But he doesn't get him 5 days a week.
Oh, no, he gets him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Well,
no,
but
that's right.
When you live in a parish and are really with people, visiting, Carol put his finger on a pastor's work. Now, you, as a teacher, has the class, if you're a certain grade. Now, where we have to be with them 24 hours, you're with them, what, 15 minutes?
Well, if you're going to count yourself 24 hours, then I count myself 24 hours, too.
Fair enough.
I'm saying, and you have to be in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could be effective otherwise.
But, I mean, there's something demonic about the way we're not even as formal as, say, a European system, but there's something terrible which prevents us from knowing those kids, and I suspect that the same is true of the Sunday school kids. The kids come in, the teacher teaches, and that's the last you see them.
I wanted to put one thing into the content of the conversation here, and then Joanne, because she didn't come last summer, so she missed out on our beautiful dean. But you remember Karen's comment here on the way Denmark had gone around this. The teacher is assigned the same class that she takes from the first grade through the eighth grade.
Yeah.
She doesn't teach every subject, but she has the same class. And then she starts with another group when she finishes that through the eighth year and back with another. So she actually has a continuous 8 years with one flock that she's the shepherd of. And then she has regular meetings with the parents. You know, there are regular parent meetings with that group of children. She not only gets into their homes, but they also are required to meet with the teacher and be with the teacher in the educational process with the child. And that's one way the continent has tried to get around this thing.
But heaven help the child who gets a teacher that doesn't have a sense of humor.
Oh, yes. Well, this is what we talked about, because Lisa had just an awful one that they retired at 49. That's the way they did. They just forced her into early retirement. But now, just now, she shot off to the Faroe Islands with her husband. She just mentioned in her letter she wrote yesterday. But it's just an awful teacher that was just vicious. And this is right. I mean, my hand tremor, I think, began with a vicious third grade teacher who hated Lutherans. I mean, and I was a Lutheran pastor's son. And it's terrible, frankly. I mean, it isn't easy when you're majority to be a minority, you know.
I went through that, too, in third grade.
And see, the Lutherans are majority in our part of the country. Catholics are minority. We got three huge Lutheran churches, one small Catholic church, and boy, every time I came to class, she was on my neck, and that was in third grade. How do you fight that?
Well, the way we did that in the experimental thing is that we had a set group, 150 kids, and even if they didn't have us for a specific, they didn't have all the teachers didn't have all the kids, but we knew them. They were 150. They stayed the same the whole year long, and. Well, it was within another high school. We were separate groups,
Because that's what two teachers to a class would help, wouldn't
mm-hmm.
it? Very
so
much.
So there were four core teachers who knew
all. Oh, you had four teachers, yeah.
And then we did other things too. We played with them. We also went on the PE things. That's why I'm in such good shape this summer. I've been on bike rides and.
Yeah. But to teach the subject, I think, is extremely important. I don't think in any way we can neglect what Barbara brought in here. I mean, I realize the English language is the hardest language to learn, even for people who are part of the English tradition.
Yeah.
So our kids are already 3 years behind the Russians. You know, by the time they get to third grade, they've lost 3 years already because they still haven't caught on to their own language. I mean, we don't spell it the way we pronounce it. We don't pronounce it the way it's spelled. And they got, you know, it's a tangle town, you know. I still remember phonetic system and so on, what a time we had with that in second grade. That's when they taught it to us in my day. But, you know, it was a terror. And this whole language thing is tough for us. And we're way behind. And then... we don't even get into mathematics very seriously until we're almost through with, well, in sixth grade, seventh grade is where it really starts, doesn't it? I mean, we have problems in content here, and then Sputnik threw that in our face, of course, that we really had gotten behind. But I don't think you can sacrifice content, but I think you do a better job on content when you're in the context. That's all I'm saying is that,
yeah.
I don't care all the way along, including the seminary, including postgraduate work. I mean, I think of a lovely friend of Al's and myself, a Unitarian, who fathered every Lutheran at the University of Chicago. We didn't have a chance at the University of Chicago. We didn't know. Al wasn't a Lutheran. Baptist is his school. But Joel and I were both Lutheran. Neither one of us got our PhDs, and he was pretty sure we wouldn't either because of the way it was set up right then. But he was beautiful. I mean, this is graduate setup. And we were in his home. There was a real sense of coziness. One of the fellows was there, MB, some sort of a shirt-tail relation, who was also very kind, but he's in the Pentecostal tradition now, but he was up there in the faculty. But to somebody to make room for you, you know, well, don't we need this all the time? I need it here. I even need it when I come back to the village, you know. A car needs it, and we do it for her yesterday. You're gone for a month, and it's not the same village you left by any means. And how do you get in? And this is all. The teacher helps the student to continually possess the classroom and feel at ease with the material by this kind of relationship. So hopefully they do better work on the content, not that you ease up on it.
I'd just like to say, when we came from England, our youngest son was 8, and his adjustment was really the hardest and the most critical for him as a person, and maybe the 8, I don't know. And when I married into Lutheranism, I was absolutely dead against parochial schools. I just had this feeling. And I mean, as I said, where we do have, I think, 2,000 parochial schools or something. And we came into and Matthew went into the parochial school. And he just came out at the end of the 8th grade and was going into the 9th grade. And I think we would have lost him, or something more dreadful would have happened to him, except that of course there was the concern there were small classes, and his homeroom teacher 1 year would be his language arts teacher the next year, and everybody knows everybody. And I remember last year, this year he's really come through, and it's just because of these Christian teachers that he has, I think. But last year he was having terrible trouble, and he seemed to be I never had to go down and see the principal, or my parents never had to go down and see the principal, and we had to go down and see the principal quite often. and right in the middle of that, Matthew said to me, how long do you think that Emmanuel school is going to be there? And I thought there was some discussion in the congregation whether we were going to be able to continue to finance it or something. So I said very reassuringly, oh, I'm sure it's going to be there for 20 years or 50 years. It's going to be there. And I thought maybe he was going to be disappointed because he was hoping we'd take him out and put him in the public school next year and we wouldn't have to have Mr. Mantle again. And he said, well, will that be enough time for me to get through college because I want to come back and teach in Emmanuel? And I was just like this. No. And I told Mr. Gray, the principal, just to encourage us both. And now he has decided that that's what he's going to do. And he's going to go on and get his, after he's taught 5 years, he's going to go on and get his master's like Mr. Botel, who's his teacher. And, like. And I said to Norman, wouldn't it be neat if we had somebody in the ministry, you know, he admired me. But at any rate, this combination of the pastor being there, you know, and the matins, and I think Matthew is this, I've really seen what a parochial school can be. The small classes, and it is your church, and it is your concern, Christian teachers who are teaching you everything.
So I think there's a problem, though, of, I'm so interested in Johnny's problem, who didn't get to have breakfast, but I forget that Johnny also has to learn the disciplines of life to survive in the outside world. And I think sometimes in our modern society that we have been so busy being sure that we socialize the children and are interested in their needs, interests, and desires, that we sometimes forget that they also have to live and are going to live as responsible citizens, and that we really have excused so many students for so long, and then they arrive on the university level with excuses, and there's no way that they're going to survive in the academic world on excuses. So someplace that content has to be high in priority. The teacher has to have knowledges that she's not just flaunting around interpersonal relationships, or he.
Yeah, she has to do her homework.
His or her great personality to bring them to the fold and have an ego trip of their own, which is the problem when we start talking about we're going to teach the whole person. Man, you know, I'm going to teach Carol to be just this great and glorious disciple of mine as a teacher. And I think that our society is very prone to do this, and right on from the pastors on down to the Sunday school teachers.
Well,
care has to be really taken that the subject matter is of paramount importance. I'm going to teach the subject matter through the student, and some students aren't going to get the subject matter that I don't care so much about, but finally and eternally, I have to care about them being responsible human beings.
Well, my area is preschool, and I feel that the most important thing any preschool teacher can do for my child in the Sunday school is to make him happy and feel warm toward the church. I don't care whether he learns any content at that area, at that stage of the game or not, but I want him to be excited about being there, and anything that goes on there, I want him to enjoy and feel this is a good place. There's love here. There's love that to me is God's love, and this is the only way a child is going to know what God's love means, because it comes through human beings around him.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's quite different. But on the other hand, the child knows parent love, who also makes him not completely satisfied with his home life on occasion. And I think the Sunday school has that same prerogative of that it's not just, you know, the joy of existence or of love can also be shown in all kinds of ways besides excusable kinds of disciplinary things.
Well, I think you don't have to worry about a child's discipline if he loves to be where he is. I mean, those discipline problems disappear.
But if you love him, you can also have it.
What if that little bugger doesn't like it? It's
well, that's the important thing. I mean, I feel a preschool teacher's job in Sunday school is to make him like it. And because if he doesn't go, if he doesn't want to go, you shouldn't force him.
Oh, no. But Johann did not go to
a But it's a teacher's job to help him love to come to church, to help him to create that attitude that this is a good thing. Sunday is a good day. There are too many homes that where Sunday is just hectic. Everybody's rushing, and mother teaches Sunday school. She's got her getting her materials together, and they barely have time to eat breakfast. And Sunday is a bad day. But I feel that a preschool child needs to feel warmly about the Sunday. He needs to feel warmly about going to church. He needs to feel warmly about entering that Sunday school room that's attractive, that's prepared, that has a teacher who knows what she's doing, and also knows him, what kind of a home he came from, so she can meet his needs.
Well, yeah, I guess I don't care whether my 3 to 5 year old gets content, but as soon as I probably get...
Even along the line, there may be... I just want to say there may be points where the person is more important than the content, even way along. I have a man on my board now whom I flunked. I took a whole class he'd already flunked before. I asked for the class when I came up to seminary. The gang I wanted to teach Greek were all those who had failed in the summer session. So I had about 25, 30 guys that had failed. I mean, terrible time to start teaching Greek in their 20s anyway. You know, they should have learned it when they were a lot younger. But here they're going to learn it, and they're going to learn it 3 times a week, so they've forgotten whatever they got 2 days before anyway. But I had a great time with this class. Some of them said, get our imagination into it, get us excited. Well, this was fun to do, because I just took badly mangled passages which had professorial touch to it, so it had tainted the real meaning, and the platonic taint that's in our society, so you've got to grab the original. Try to get them. Well, most of these guys came through, but not Bob. Bob could not write an English sentence. Unfortunately, folks have a little money, and they'd send him to an expensive private school. He never learned how to write a sentence in English. He didn't know what subject and predicate was. And I finally had to say, Bob, I'm flunking you, and you're going to make a great pastor, which he is. He's one of the great pastors out of right here. Now he's on our board. I just mentioned that there are times when you have to say, you know, there's something greater than this. But at the same time, I wouldn't recommend Bob for a seminary prof teaching Greek. But on the other hand, Norsted didn't finish St. Olaf, and Preci Bo says, get in online, Norsted, I don't want to see you around here anymore. He didn't finish the seminary, and there isn't a greater guy in our society, and in a way, a more astute guy than that crazy Norsted. I mean, he's the one that's headed up this whole ecology thing and the whole reform and our kind of processes in healing. But a student he will never be. A beautiful bluff he is, and so is his brother. But they bluff right, you see what I mean? I mean, in terms of people, they know it.
I would care what my, if I had a 3 or 4 year old or a 2 year old, I would care what the content was, and I maintain that there is content there. The question is,
of course there is content, but I don't think the content is the thing that we should be, as far as my child is concerned, I want him to like it first. He'll get the content if he likes it.
The point is, if you don't have a content,
you will have a content.
You don't have meaning at all.
Of course you'll have a content. I didn't say scuttle the content.
I'm talking both things. It seems to me that in order to even have a meeting...
Of course you've got to have content.
To relate to the students, you've got to have some content.
Of course.
So if it's a song about Jesus,
right.
At least make sure that it's not...
But make sure that he's happy about singing that song.
Yeah, I think what's important to her is that all along the line, they shouldn't have to learn something they got to unlearn later.
Right.
I mean, and this certainly is beautifully done in your whole approach and N.C.S. Lewis's.
Yeah.
I mean, like I use for an illustration, some of the people hop my neck up here because this place is too intellectual. I said, wait a minute, you know. I said, when C.S. Lewis is writing stories for children, my 2-year-old is being read aloud the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and right away he says, Aslam, that's Jesus. Well, how in the world a 2-year-old makes an association between a lion and Jesus, you can read the book to discover. But he did, and he would. But what does he say about Aslam in there? He isn't safe, but he's good. Mm-hmm. Boy, that little line says an awful lot to me about God that a lot of people never catch up with. He isn't safe, but he's good.
Well, I think it's very important that a preschool teacher has the right theology and the right idea of doctrine, because she can really mess a child up if she doesn't. That is important.
I wonder, the first book we ever wrote that was never published, which there have been several since, I actually have 3 unpublished books, but first one was on Cry Hosanna. It was long gospel for little children. And Farrell and I wrote together because Jennings is a great pastor. He's one of the greatest pastors we have. And he had suffered so as a child with melancholy, because all he got was be always kind and true. Goodbye, goodbye, be always kind and true. And he was living his baptismal content. I managed to leave mine fairly young. By the time I got to be 6 or 7, I was pretty far away. But there he was living in, you know, the need of forgiveness and not getting it.
Yeah.
Well, we can think of our Sunday schools there.
You're talking about relating to the whole person. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I had kind of a sobering experience. I taught 8th grade the last 2 years in my church. And,
you really picked a good grade.
Yeah.
And a 14-year-old.
That's a tough one.
That's the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And I got a lot out of it. I'm not so sure that the class did all the time, but they wanted to do something together as a class. And their lament was that, you know, we don't do anything. And I didn't profess to know the girls, and they were mostly girls, 7 girls and 4 boys, very well. But I realized after a little experience, I didn't know them at all. And what we did finally at the Sunday before the last Sunday, we went on an overnight hike. And there were 6 14-year-old girls and 1 14-year-old boy. Now, the boy I know quite well. So we slept in one tent, and the 6 girls slept in another tent. And the upshot of it is that I have so little in common with 14-year-old girls, it's just appalling. We really have nothing in common at all. And I thought, I didn't necessarily take pride in the fact that I can communicate with people, but I think that I can to a degree, but I can't communicate with 14-year-old girls outside the Sunday school class, which had a certain amount of discipline in it so that we could, you know, communicate back. And I think we'd get a little bit back and forth before we get out in the woods and kind of, you know, everything was just kind of loose. How was that? I was really humbled. I was taken down a number of times, continually, until I kind of came out when I was dragging my kids behind me. Maybe, I don't really know how I would rectify that. I'm not sure how I would.
Yeah, but you recognized the point. You weren't putting up a good front, and so the kids could see through it. I would say that you met them.
And I wonder if it matters whether you those six girls had a good time together.
Yeah, and I knew
those six girls got fellowship. And I think sometimes that's sort of, you weren't standing in the way of the light, at least.
No, right.
But he was with them.
Yeah, you were there.
And
you were
they
there.
Had to have a supervisor of some kind in order to be able to do this. So some of our tasks, I think, is not to be the encounter, but merely the provider.
The facilitator.
Yeah, you don't have to be a friend all the time. It's enough time to be a keeper.
Exactly. I remember.
He
was our friend.
Yeah. One of the grandmothers in the family relationship is 85 and very sharp, but she broke her hip or her leg, and she said, "Oh, why didn't the Lord take me? I just can't see any point going on." So I said, "Listen, you got to fight to stay alive because we need somebody around not to pay any attention to, you know." And in the youth picture, I used to tell the sponsors this: they need you there in order to ignore you, you know, and the older and the younger. And some of this is true. We were very much there, just in their own relationship to each other. Different because we're there. There's a concern still.
Can I make another comment on this? In both years, as we talked to the class, I asked them about television because they, you know, in the session before, and they were just talking, they talked about television programs. And I would say, Wednesday at 7:30, they could tell me what was on all three channels. You could say, Thursday at 10 o'clock, they tell you what was on. And so I made a survey the first year to see how much television they watched. And it's delightfully absent up here. But in at least that group of children, both years, the television was the parent almost. When it averaged out that they watched 3.5 hours a day, if they're telling the truth, that's incredible. One gal said that she watched 7 hours. Well, I discount that a little bit. But I said, how can you get 7 hours of television in? She said, well, I watch it in the morning, and during breakfast, during meals. I think you were talking about that the other day, was that during mealtime? That's a very difficult medium to fight, I think.
Yeah, and if you all want to teach the total person, you better get them outside.
Get them outside and stood by the TV?
Do
really,
anything.
Well, it really helps to be involved in more than one area of the child as far as relationship. I can attest to that. But we've got some other high school teachers here. Most semesters of a school year, you perhaps get to know maybe. I mean, what I'm talking about, get to know very, very well a certain amount of students. But I would say it's probably around five who come, hang around your desk and come after school, you know, and talk and want you to be more than just a teacher of the subject. Mm-hmm. And you might get certain kids come for a period of time and then it's out. But you get about four or five in a good semester who hang in there the whole time and they're really sorry. So you go in this program. I probably got to know 50 of the kids really well. And that was simply because sometimes they felt they had to watch out for me. For instance, I had my bodyguards who watched for me so that I'd make it on a 32-mile bike ride. I mean, they were three boys, and they kept me going and say, I think it's time for a stop now, or would you like a mint? and I mean, in that case, you see, they weren't, I wasn't reaching them at all. They were. But that was the relationship.
You were, though.
Well, yes.
You were teaching them concern. I mean,
I played with them.
Exactly the same.
Yeah. I was playing with them and I was talking with them and I was also initiating some study. Of course, it was totally unlike a regular classroom, but boy, does that ever help to break down the barriers about student and teacher.
That's why I think it's so important for the Sunday school teacher, the church school teacher, to have occasions when she can get together with her class, or if the parents would just say, well, why don't you come over to our house for a swimming party or whatever. If the parents would just work up little social things where they could all go and be somewhere besides in the church school setting.
Now you're creating a problem for surrogate parents too, which I think is beautiful. Go ahead here. Somebody.
Did you ever stop to analyze why these kids watch television for 3.5 to 4 hours? If anything is that gripping, why we can learn a lot from it.
Yeah. Filling a void.
Well, we've got competition. I'd like to hear. I'm wondering if you'd give us any thought.
Well, first of all, really, how it is in our home, and this is with my wife's approval, is we limit it drastically to probably about 7 hours a week. And I find them watching Gilligan's Island and watching the reruns and can tell us what's going on. I think we're weaning them away from even that 7 hours.
No, but why is there this strong, why does television have such a strong hold?
I would maybe relate it to the when I was that age, and if I could go to a cowboy movie and fantasize where everything was really neat, I'd go to the same one every Friday night if my dad would take me. And here they have it right in the home, and unless you, I think they just lose themselves.
I stole milk bottles to go on Saturday, I know.
I think one reason they watch it is they absorb it is because they know their friends are doing the same thing. And the next day in school, somebody says, did you watch such a program last night? It's this...
Common denominator.
Pardon?
Common denominator.
Well, it's something to discuss with their friends.
Well, it's a prestige
thing. Which to relate.
It can also be the common denominator, which a teacher uses very effectively to get the class to too.
But this I've often felt is, we've been on many different subjects here, but in parish education, this is one thing that I think we could use but haven't used. I guess if I were ever asked to do something with Sunday school materials or something like that, I'd make sure that everybody at all age studied the same thing so that there's at least a chance that the kids might discuss the lesson with their parents when they got home. In other words, there's no reason at all why the third graders, the seventh graders, the high school, and the adults can't be studying the same thing on a given subject, on a given Sunday. So that you get this support. I think one of the problems in the school, public school now, is this the use of things like new math and new social studies, which aren't new at all, but the vocabulary is just new, so the kids can't discuss school at all with their parents. And they lose this support. They can't come home and tell their parents about what they learned, because their parents don't know what they're talking about. And I think this is unfortunate. They watch TV, they know they've got somebody else to talk to about it, because they know that 5 million others were watching that same program.
You know how important it is to be able to sing the ads with your friends.
And if we got them something that they could talk about with their friends, talk about with their parents.
Yeah, peer group approval.
Yeah. I think another thing, in watching TV, it's right there. You don't have to think about anything. It all feeds it right into you. It's like going to a Jerry Lewis movie. You don't have to, you know, think about the plot, because everything's right there. And like, I remember not that many years ago when, you know, when I was like 14 or that age or whatever, school age, and you were watching TV, and it was just something to do. You just sat, plopped down on the sofa and watched the TV. You didn't have to think to do it. It was right there.
It was an exerting. You just sat there.
Pardon?
It wasn't exerting, it wasn't creative, it was spoon fed.
Mm-hmm. And you don't, you know, you didn't have to think what the plot was, because mainly TV programs are just, you know, pretty
The boob tube, they call it.
On the kids' side, I've learned an enormous lot in the last 3 years because of the school run that I have to do in the morning, because if I didn't take the kids, we'd all have to get up 1 hour, 3 hour, 1 3/4 hours early so they could make the bus. And I'd have to cook 2 breakfasts, and I'm not about to do it, so I do a school run. And after I've left off one, I have got about 15 minutes, nearly 12 minutes in the car when we're outside Chicago, I can turn on WLS, which is the watch station. And if you turn it on for 12 minutes or 10 minutes every day coming home, you know, they repeat so often, you know everything. You know those songs. And of course, my husband isn't about to take, say, 10 or 15 minutes every day to listen to this stuff. But it's incredible how different it is from what we were doing at that age, what real emotions or real problems or things they're talking about, and that this is absolutely a common culture. They all know it, and my college students all know this stuff too, and they're in jokes that's love the one you're with, for instance, is out now, but there are all sorts of things which are in their thinking. And just even, I'm the senior advisor to Mortarboard that our school have been this last year, and even those kids who are very outstanding, top women students, I really feel I know them better because of these jolly songs. Because it's so conditioning, don't you feel this? And there, and I think kids could move in from another community, and they could get in with those kids because of that.
Yeah, but then why aren't we making use of this?
Yeah, I feel that I am in relationship with my kids.
That's the point. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In our parish program, in Sunday school.
Yeah.
But you see, now when a brokering tries to do this, he runs into this terrific generation gap, and that we pastors don't know what he's talking about. If the kids had the materials, they would. But unfortunately, they're in our hands, and so we keep brokering out, you know.
Oftentimes, though, I think, at least the kids in my life, the oldest kids that I had this year were 6 there. But lots of times, they don't want me to bring that to them because they're private.
They know it all.
All by themselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm intruding on their territory if I try to solely do that.
This is why, for this fellow, like just being there.
Now, being there.
Pop Halverson was a guy that Ernie Zarb developed, and he inarticulate, absolutely inarticulate, and quite intimidated sort of a person, and used to bust him once in a while for his inferiority complex. He'd never come to men's meet, but he simply became the sponsor of the youth. He never said a word to them, but when the guys came back from all around the place after World War II, I was there just as it ended, and they were coming in. They went to see Pop before they saw their parents sometimes. Boy, Pop, and I was going to the guys of that old whorehouse, and I thought, I got to see you, and you'll be looking at me. I didn't go, you know. And one night, the kids just thought, sure, let's give Pop a big spread. So they put it all over. But Pop, we love you, and so on. And, but he was there. That's all. He was there.
He was just there to come and listen.
Exactly.
And make it
never intruded.
I had an interesting experience. One of my mothers was telling about, they had a Thanksgiving. This pertains to preschoolers too. This is my life, of course. But so that's the only language I know. But they had this huge relation there over Thanksgiving weekend. And Ruthie was the littlest of the clan. And so her mother was wondering how she fared through the Thanksgiving. So when everybody left, she said, well, how did you enjoy it, Ruthie? And Ruthie says, I really liked Uncle John. And her mother said that Uncle John was on these people who didn't say boo the whole weekend, as far as she could see. She said, well, why did you like Uncle John? Well, she says, I showed him my rock. And he looked at it, and he looked at it, and he said, He didn't have to do a lot of talking.
Uh-uh.
why I think our gentleman shouldn't be discouraged that he didn't know the innards of these 14-year-old girls. Nobody does.
Who does?
Yeah, and along the line of just being there, I teach ninth graders, and I haven't done anything like this long bicycle hike or something, but just going to a basketball game, I'll see a changed attitude in the team members in my class and the work we do afterwards.
Sure.
Just being there.
And if you can make a remark about how they played, you know, saw you make that basket, you know.
I think that's true even on a college level.
Yeah.
The guys, I can't stand football, but I'll go to these silly football games. And in a junior college level course, a guy in history and philosophy, which he cares nothing about, when he found out I went to the football game and I even knew his number and his end run, it was some kind of difference. Now that kind of interpersonal is all right with me. I still can teach my content in my class.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to have this on the side of it. And girls, college girls like that I can't stand field hockey. Mostly because I'm no good, you know, I don't know what I'm good in. Didn't even understand the game. But having one on the side explain it, who had missed my tennis class about four times, probably because of my statements to her. But after that came, and at least attempted it because I had bothered to go. So I think on the high school level, and for parents, if they would just go watch their kids in a drama, in anything, that there would be a lot, and they don't even have to say anything except, you know, go without a big deal or not, whether you won or whether you lost. If there's anything that's going to ruin our future, it's father asking him whether he won the little league game instead of just that he was there.
Yeah.
But this is the important thing, I think, for parents, in watching the college kids, too. It's, you know, why did you come to this college? And if his father says so, you can forget there.
One of the things is finding out what teenage kids are thinking if you can't with them. Because for some reason, they feel that just because they can't see you, you can't hear them. And you can be in a tent next to them and you can't if you don't hear a thing. So you keep your mouth shut and pretend that you don't. And really, you can find out a great deal about what they think.
Mm-hmm. Can I suggest
we've been doing it for years.
One way how you can get to know your own kid in a way. It's so funny. I don't understand it. But the one-to-one thing, if one kid is home and it's maybe better for your husband, my husband's home for lunch all the time. So if there's a kid home, there are three of us. And it's good. But it's sometimes good if either Norm would do it or I would. We have lunch out. I don't know what that special thing is. And just in a, not a McDonald's place, not a posh restaurant either, just the kids sitting on the other side of the formica top place, you know, and you're having something. And there you are, and obviously he's going to talk to you in a way that you don't at home.
And a lot of times when you drive with just one, too.
Because at home, you're so busy with that supper. With that lunch, with that hopping up to
yeah,
that,
and he isn't
2.5 feet
away from me either.
And you know, you're preoccupied really with the dinner.
Yeah. But I think I found that if I'm out 1-to-1 with one of my own kids for a meal, there's just something really memorable.
Well, when it comes to your own family, there's a
that's another
story.
Can I address your experience of having them both in church school or catechism and in public school?
I mean, where you have them both places, the
yes.
same teacher.
Yes.
Now, I've always done this with my confirmants. I mean, the best thing I ever wrote, I wish the church would republish it. It's called You Can Hold Every Confirmant. But I had the confirmation class choose which person in the community they wanted and which person in the school system they wanted to be their two teachers through the high school period. And then I'd go get the teachers. I mean, they didn't have a choice. They'd already been selected, elected, And of course, it's a doctor they all admire, and it's the busiest teacher in the school system, maybe, but the two are together. And I say, well, if one of you are gone on Sunday, it isn't going to kill the class. The other one will carry the continuity. But you two people are going to be the pastors of this class for the next 3 years.
Because you've been chosen.
And they carry because they've been chosen.
Yeah.
And so there they are. They're there, sophomores, juniors, senior year. I never lost a confirmant. The other thing in which we didn't ever lose a confirmant, the deacons, it was their responsibility, not mine. And if a boy was missing, they brought him to the next Sunday school class. They were there. My parish where it called him, and all the kids in the class would, every time they saw him during that week in the school quarters, would say, how come you missed last Sunday? See, it wasn't worth missing.
You know, that might be a, that might be a good way to recruit Sunday school teachers. In each class, have them say who they'd like to have as their teacher, and then go to that person and say, our class voted that they'd like to have you for their teacher.
Well, it works for the country.
I'm the pessimist here, but that isn't possible where I live. Mm-hmm.
No, I'm aware in some areas.
They don't know enough adults, I suppose.
Well, besides that, I mean, if the kids said, well, who would you like to be your sponsor?
They wouldn't know.
These kids don't have those people in common. Mm-hmm. Somebody has... They don't know anybody.
That's what
common,
I mean.
That
yeah.
The family doctor doesn't go to our church.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. No, I know. This is true.
That, right. So it seems to me, though, that there ought to be some lessons, not just for how to relate to Sunday school kids, but how do adults in the church, how do we get to really know those people when we're not in community with them? That is, when we're not in a community, a small community together. Because the church always is talking about community, mm-hmm. and they only meet together 1 hour or 2 hours on Sunday morning, and we don't really relate to each other. We don't have things in common. We hear a sermon, and if we're lucky, we get to say something back the next hour. But mm-hmm. so that's the end. Unless you really busy up your week by making a point to be there for choir practice and for.
I still wonder, though, how much that's true, because now my church draws from the whole, in fact, you know, almost a fifth of our church come from St. Paul, and then from the area around, there are a lot of people that drive 40, 50 miles on Sunday, and yet I knew those older people, and so did, there were 84 in our confirmation class, but I knew who old Rumsos was from Norway, who N.N. Running was, who was kind of the Twin Cities Socrates and so on, and these people meant something to me, that were just around the place. And they were aware of you, these old boys. Now, they were the deacons. I didn't know that's what they were called then. I just knew that these fellows had some peculiar interest and concern about whether we came out on top or not, you know, like you do, sort of.
Carol, you knew something about them because you have the records and things, and besides that, they relate to you because pastors get...
I wasn't a pastor. I wasn't a pastor. I was a widow's kid out of the slum area of Minneapolis. The Norwegian slum is where I came from. But these people were concerned. I came right out of the Norwegian ghetto.
Yeah.
The black ghetto and Norwegian ghetto were right together. We had no prejudice against the blacks, whatever, only Swedes.
We were the minority in our small town, too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think there's an awareness more than we give credit to these kids of the older, whether they're indifferent or interested.
Right.
And that's all I would say here. They know whether... The older ones are aware, and I became aware later how much aware they were, mm-hmm. really. But they were aware. And for this one, I got $1,000 check from one gal here just 2 weeks ago. I couldn't figure out whether she'd remarried or forgotten. But her boy had been forgotten one father's and son's banquet by one of the pastors on the staff. He just plain forgot to go pay. I was so furious, you know. I just blew my stack both at the guy and went and got him. Well, we just got $1,000 from the mother. She remarried, and that boy's now at the seminary. But somebody who was older was interested at that moment when he didn't have a dad, you know.
Yeah.
And just what this means, just that means. That's all I'm saying. That's the whole person you're concerned about, not just this. And I will admit, in the confirmation situation, you've got a problem. Pastors have got maybe different feelings of conscience, but I always took the boys off the hook, just like Al's trying to do this here now, and maybe overstates his case, but he doesn't want anybody guilty. So you can discuss objectively, not feel guilty. Well, I tell the boys, you know, when we start our confirmation classes, in fact, I try to tell confirmation class over and over again through the year, I don't want to be here, you don't want to be here, now let's forget it, you know, and get to work. But all of us on Saturday morning would rather be someplace else. But these boys, I'd say, okay, if I ever make fun of you, if you ever have a sarcastic remark to me, I hope my car breaks down outside your garage someday so you can sit there and laugh at me. Don't repair it. I mean, we all got different gifts, and I don't expect you're going to come out on top on all this stuff. And when I learned later that we didn't have that method developed when I was in a parish, but where you compete only with yourself, like the new method is, and I could promise those slow kids you're going to get an A in this. They made me write my name that this is an honest mark on it for their parents to see because they never had one before. But they were competing with themselves and over against themselves. It was an A. Now, why can't we teach that way a little bit? This is a concern for the person.
Well, yeah. We run a tutorial confirmation program in most of my church. And I think that's very successful because the kids have to make the appointments themselves to see the pastor.
when they're ready with the...
With whatever they are.
That they're done.
Does the group ever get together?
Yeah, that's the other thing. See, then you miss out on... You get a one-to-one relationship, which is great, yeah. from the teacher-student side, but then you're apt to forget about the need for the social care. They do that, but I think that adults as well as the kids in the church, especially in the urban city, in the urban situation, needs some place to gather around. Since community is not there in the same way that the church in a small town is community. We don't create community.
I'd like to say here, for over against our whole past history, I think the greatest thing our Lutheran church has had is this confirmation program, where you've had 2 years or a year even with a pastor whose chief concern was you during that period. You knew it was, and he was hard-boiled about it. I don't know of any pastor lets anybody pull him away from that, short of some sort of calamity in an area. And you could see this in the military. I mean, on my retreats to the military, it's been just fascinating to watch this. What's their line of loyalty? Why are they here at this particular retreat? Is that old confirmation pastor they had? And for years I made the practice, like when I was in youth work, in charge of youth work for the church, and some youth that said, I'm interested in the ministry. I said, who confirmed you? You know, that's where it went. Back to their confirmation experience, that particular pastor, and that's what they'd like to be like. It's like your son with a teacher, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
And this is a terrific thing. And I sure hope that early community, this is why Al Rognes and Art Howerson, dear friends of mine, were very close and very identified in our whole outlook, but they were opposed to children at the community table, and I was pushing it early, you know, and tried to get our boys over from Denmark to talk it up, because they were afraid, will the pastors maintain this kind of a relationship if we lose communion as sort of the leverage for confirmation? And I said, I'd hate to think that they had that little integrity they wouldn't maintain at this adolescent moment, that kind of long-term contact, because it's the greatest thing we've had, really. I mean, all the other churches envy us for it, and it's got a lot to do with why, wherever I go in the church, and I go with all three synods, I haven't been any place where the men, you are not very aware of men in church on Sunday morning, and this is not true in other denominations, as we know, but the men are there, and that confirmation thing is held on right through.
You know, what scares me about that, and I came in from an absolute non-church background, and my mother was a career woman and always earned more than my father and so forth, and I was always gung-ho for professional women, and it startled me, the whole attitude in the Lutheran church anyway about women a bit, and I was against that initially, but I've had to realize, and now it worries me when women have the vote, that same things as in church do, because I think, you know, we're sitting there at home, maybe our kids are in school, and we have abilities, we have organizational abilities, we have time to do things, and if we don't watch it, we're not going to have the men there, because their wives can do it. I mean, this is just a really flip for me to feel this, but I mean, if we, you know, take the ground out from under them, and we have ability,
but
they're not going to be.
Betsy, I think that may have been true a few years ago, but not so much now. Now over 50% of them are working. They're not
going to have much time. And the men are learning to be more articulate, too. I mean, we're not,
yes,
right. The hyphenated generations are over. I think when we had Norwegian American, Swedish American, German American, the men were less articulate.
I think we have women on our church council, and LCA, you know, they've been voting ever since I was a little kid. But I don't see that it has hurt.
No.
I think it's brought the men up, really put them on their toes.
Well,
and three women there.
I think so, too.
And
yeah.
If there were some active men in the church aside from the deacons, you know, thank God.
Yeah.
And I've lived in England for 16 years, and the Anglican church is just full of women.
Yeah, no men.
And I mean, the strength that is in American Lutheranism, the number of men there, I think it's way out in confounded with the other Protestant denominations and their participation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is, but boy, let's hang on to it.
No, it is fascinating. I mean, it's around 90 men to 100 women in the Lutheran church, and the other Protestant churches don't come near.
Yeah, probably evangelical.
Which evangelical?
Probably like Baptist and that whole group. I don't think we would be
Well, I really would have a hard time saying. I know it's down around 60 or something like that, and I don't know exactly, but it's around
it. But it is lower.
Yes. Well, you can ask yourself there because, well, it's like Johann was the first time he ever heard a Southern Baptist approach on TV and went down to Texas. He said, you mean people really buy this approach to Christianity? I said, well, if they've been brought up with it and they've gotten used to it, they can't. Boy, he said, I don't see how this could turn any man on. You know.
But, you know, the Northern Baptists, yeah. They're really gung-ho doing a lot of the things that you've been talking
yeah.
about, like
yeah.
the Baptists out in the suburbs or wherever.
Yeah. Yeah.
That Woodlake Baptist,
yeah,
they're with
good
their
one.
Kids and yeah. adults are with their kids morning, noon, and night, yeah. every day, 7 days a week.
Well, you have beautiful parishes for which, you know, they're like my parish. Central Lutheran, that's the one parish that's the exception on this, on women. And so I said, we've got to march the men up and down the aisle, you know, all 60 ushers. So you forget the fact that we've got 3,900 single women and widows in that one
yeah.
parish, which we do.
It's interesting how the Baptists are going into parochial education, that in our area they're building schools right after
that. Yeah,
after
yeah.
That.
Well, that's because the public schools are getting so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is one going to be one bad part of the Baptist parochial system because they'll be so... down the line.
Where are they getting bad?
Well, I think it's a local condition. I know in our area, our parochial schools are doing beautifully because our we don't feel that they have small classes, and
yeah, you gotta watch they don't come for the wrong reason.
Well, but I know definitely the reason that we have a waiting list for the parochial schools is because the people are very unhappy with the public schools. They're overcrowded classrooms. Every time we have a bond issue a vote, it's voted down. And so they're just jammed together. They're going on, you know, double time, and they're trying to figure out all ways to make the facilities take care of these children. And, well, the parents would just rather send them to parochial school and pay the tuition.
But, you know, in our own traditions now, I mean, we're speaking about our
yeah.
traditions here, the Scandinavian gang. We had parochial schools in the last century, and we squashed them. And we squashed them for one reason, and you can see one reason why listening to me a little while, and that's that there was too much cultural identity with it. It was, were we going to be Americans in America, or were we going to live with our heads screwed on backwards looking at Europe? And that's where we busted them all the way through. Now they came back in California for us.
I think that's the strength and the weakness of New Jersey right
yeah.
there.
Now the Baptists are going to be denominational, mm-hmm. narrow-minded.
Yeah, this is
that's
their problem.
The reason they're having their schools, they don't want to get them into this drug culture and everything
yeah.
else. So let's get our kids in where the skirts below the knees.
But I guess that's
yeah.
why I connected to the parochial school so much, is that you have to live in the whole world, and all these kids are going to deal in that. Nothing is an abstraction so much, and that the kind of world we live in is going to depend upon this kid who doesn't have a church background, who is a privilege. And unless the whole community is really concerned with the public school system, I don't care if my kid has got, you know, the best education in the world, the kid down the street is going to be influential in his life. And I live in the suburbs and work in the inner city, and man, you know, this is a world of difference. The kids that are youth workers that they have them. And those kids live in this world, and my kids are going to have to learn how to cope with them. I think this is so inclusive and just so dangerous.
That's why I was against growth. I must admit that the people in my church who have kids in the school, we have an elementary school, of the ones I talked to, I would say the majority of them were those who voted against the school bonds. And
yeah.
I, you know, I try to convince them, look, I mean, granted, your kid may be getting a better education here, but you better be concerned that your next door neighbor who doesn't
right.
have a school here is also getting good education in public schools.
Yeah. You see, that's a problem.
And boy, is that ever
well,
a
problem.
Well,
in this program, how you look at it, you still have to be able to get along with it.
I don't understand the reasoning of the people who will not spend the money to make the public school situation better, but will spend it to send them to the parochial.
Do you know what I heard them say? And this actually came from a parent, and I just can't believe my ears. She said, well, as soon as schools get better, then we'll vote for the bond issues. And I said, well, just a minute. You know, you're getting the cart before the horse. And I was making a pitch for this bond issue, and somebody looked at me and she says, "That's odd of you to say that. You don't have any kids in school."
Of course, Robert Kennedy's last remarks, you've got it in the center papers, incidentally, which you'll have in your files at home, I'm sure. But on that one conference they had down there in Santa Barbara in the center on education, he said he would go back to Congress and fight any more federal appropriations to education until the educators got down to the business of education. Which there's something to be said for there, too, you see. I mean, you don't get it by building bigger schools and putting in more doodads, you know.
No, but you need adequate. You certainly need adequate build. We have a community that's 50,000 now, and when we got there 4 years ago, it was about half that, wasn't it, Rudy?
Yeah. Well,
and
when they grow that fast,
you've got to make schools.
I would express my own prejudice in closing here, and it's a prejudice rather than an informed conviction all the way along. But I still don't think we in the American scene have developed a professional teacher. Whereas the continent does have a professional teacher. That's why you get men teaching in second grade and don't feel embarrassed about the fact they're teachers. And that's a position in Europe. I mean, it's a function. You're part of a status group. You're a teacher. But we don't have that feeling about it in America. I mean, the literature reflects this
and
everything else.
In our parochial schools, that's what interests me, too. Yeah, and there is a strength in Missouri in that we have 12 teachers in our school where Matthew was, 8 of them were men, which is just staggering.
I know, 8 out of 12. Think
there's
of the
a
average
call,
grade school.
They're called like a pastor.
Yeah.
And there is
right.
an elevation of
no.
profession
no.
there, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
well,
I think never
yeah.
coming into
I'm
the elementary
grateful.
School.
Yeah.
That's
yes,
right.
they are.
Yeah.
Also, that
it'll change.
That isn't that very feminine kind of
And even preschool, by the way.
Yeah, yeah,
we're
yeah.
getting a lot of kindergarten, men kindergarten teachers.
I
they love it. So do the children.
You know, if you want to see yeah. what's happening in terms of teacher image,
yeah.
there's a lot of problems there with...
Nursery school.
Being proud
too.
Of your profession, that kind of thing. Simply because, well, any number of reasons, because we don't have a voice.
Yeah.
The administration has voice. Students
yeah.
have voice.
Yeah.
Parents have voice. Teachers are out to lunch.
Yeah.
We don't get on curriculum. They, you know, nobody asks us anything.
I know.
And as far as teachers are really powerless, and especially when the education colleges
yeah.
turn out teachers out of the mill like mad, so that they've got this tremendous surplus of teachers, and everybody's really very antsy about positions. People think I'm absolutely crazy to give up my position.
I know.
And I wouldn't give it up if I couldn't take a leave of absence. But even that, if when I come back, I may get stuck in some other school. That's not anywhere near as good as the one I do know. But I mean, there are all kinds of problems with teacher image, but as far as the masculine, feminine image, no, I think that's...
Because I think the major problem is leisure. I mean, I still think, I mean, I'm 100% Luther here at this point. I'll quote him because he's beautiful. He says, the knights are always, you know, criticizing the teachers as if it was such an easy job. He says, as if it took so much to be able to sit straight on a horse. No, this is how he starts off on it. He said, they should try teaching and see how hard it is. He said, nobody should teach for more than 10 years.
Yeah.
And Luther teaches what? How many hours a week? 5.
Yeah.
I don't think it's humanly possible to teach 30 hours a week. I honestly don't think about it without going absolutely out of your cotton-picking mind. You go crazy to try to teach both a person and a subject for 30 hours a week. You'd be so exhausted they'd pick you up pieces off the street. So you've got to... You sacrifice one side or the other equation, in other words, that's what I'm saying. And I think we have to grow up. I think that perhaps establishing the kind of communes like we've got going here in the village, where you can support a teacher on much less because he gets his board and room and he can stick the rest in the bank. I don't know, maybe that's one solution. But where you've got a lot more people teaching, it's going to take care of our whole surplus intelligentsia that we're worrying about right now. Because we can absorb them all in the teaching game.
Where it's going to help in terms of women, is that there are now 200 other jobs that women can do.
Yeah.
Therefore, all those who don't want to teach,
don't have
to. Who are in teaching because they were, as
Amen.
They waited for husbands,
yeah.
are not going to happen.
Thank you
Plus,
for saying it. I couldn't have said that.
Men are now being accepted, and the women are accepting that men can teach
Amen.
Just as well. And they are not guarding this with their lives, because their lives can be every place
oh,
else.
Sure.
And then we'll only get teachers
yeah.
who want to teach, who really care to teach, and aren't sitting around waiting
right.
for their future.
And I think we need to outgrow
so
the frontier.
Personnel is
If it were a 12-month thing, we wouldn't survive. It's when we have a summer off and come to a place like this to renew that we can survive.
Yeah, and then the parents and the school bond says, let's run our schools 12 months. Our teachers are doing nothing but messing around.
But you see, now, if you give in to that, you have, well, we're through. American civilization's through right there. Howie Hong had the best argument on this at the Salem faculty I know of, and the Salem faculty did not take it seriously. I do, and that's why I think it's a good thing to close on. They, you know, the Salem faculty is going to teach summer session also to get a little more income. And Howard says, fine, he'd vote for this if the income went for all the teachers who refused to prostitute themselves and to money earners instead of teachers by teaching during the summer session. Imagine how many friends he made with that, but he stuck to it. What's more, he cut his own in half. He only teaches half the time. And that's at the college.
The ones who can really teach summer school are those that don't teach.
Oh, you need
that whose energies haven't been used up, even on the college level.
And pastors need to fight more for this, George. Really, they really do.
I agree, Carol.
I'm glad we're catching up, but we really need to fight. 4 months, 4 weeks has been nothing. The old ALC gave 2 weeks, that's all. And now, because the Presbyterians were getting 6, and ALC has picked up 6, 2 for research and 4 for vacation. But it's you can't... I say the first thing... I just want to say this one thing. The devil's first temptation of man was what? I'm trying to think of it in English because I got the little Latin tag there. You shall be as God. Sicut erit est. You shall be like God. And that's what man thinks he can. He keep on pouring it out, not taking it back. But we got to take back in everything we pour out.
I'd like to suggest to my church council and the next guy they call when I resign, retire, that they put in the call, you're going to get 2 weeks of whole village.
Do that.
Oh, that's terrific.
Can I just tell about a town in Connecticut? I can't think of its name, but a friend of mine's husband is the Episcopalian minister there. And it's a town that doesn't want to just get young kids out of the seminary or get an older retired pastor of any denomination. There's Methodist, Anglican, Lutheran, Roman Catholic, and something else. Anyway, there are 5 churches. It's a sort of a suburb. And so what they have done, the town as a whole, I can't imagine it, because they realized that the participation of these 5 clergy in the town. And they want to get interesting and interested people. So they have decided that they'll just go around, okay, Lutheran and Anglican and whatever. They, as a town, give this guy a sabbatical every 5 years, and he can do anything he wants. And Dick and Joan came to England, and he was in an Anglican pulpit for half the year, and then he studied. Then the next year, the Roman Catholic guy was up. And they that's right, they're holding their guys. They are buying their guys.
That's wonderful. Who wouldn't rather have leisure than money?
You know, Carol, the congregations would get 3 times more out of their man when he came back.
Of course.
You'd send them away, 2 weeks here.
Well, yeah,
I'm going to pour more into that parish now than I might stay there.
And you could always have a clause to stay with them 2 years after you're back from sabbatical. That's what they do to LA teachers.
I'll never forget a Roman Catholic labor union guy joined our church, and I hadn't been going down to Chicago, and I started to go down there again. First sermon I gave after I went down there, you know, started just, you know, commute 180 miles, but got in a few classes a week. You ain't ought to ever give up that University of Chicago pastor, you know. That sermon was great. Well, they can tell right away. The congregation could tell I was reading during the week, or if I wasn't, for that matter. They could tell I was reading German, because my sentences are all in backwards. But you know, I mean, a congregation appreciates when a pastor respects himself to fight for that leisure, but they don't want to give it to him. It's just like an employer respects his help when they fight for a decent way to do that job, and he knows they'll do a job better. There's equity all around, but
he
won't give it to him.
I worked for Timken Ball Bearing, and every so often, they get 3 months off, the labor union, 3 months.
Yeah, I know. That's what they're doing now.
Now, if that's an industry, why shouldn't it be in school?
Well, time is becoming much more, I think, something that we can be free with, and I'm just hopeful that, like I say, this is an experiment 21st century community. I hope that we've got lots of these going around the country, you know, in the 21st century, because the resources are there. All kinds of exciting people are. In fact, we found that out last year when we got to the last week and had no faculty because our faculty all went off early 10 days. Boy, just from the people who were here, Frixell and so on, you know, we had a fascinating week. Just the people who were here produced it. And they're there to allow this to happen. And then I don't think, teaching is something that a person who loves it is glad to do. He's got to be able to live and pay his grocery like anybody else. But if he have time, he'll gladly sacrifice a dollar for time. And this is why we could get teachers on some of our church college faculties back a while back.
Sure.
You know? And this was all your dean talked to me when he called me there. Don't forget, Carol, you know, you can get up there in that cabin North Shore 3 months every year. That's what I've got up there. He had one up at Ely, I guess, your dean. But it's true. It is easy to forget that we've got to take in what we put out. You know, it's all of us do. There aren't any exceptions.
I think of since we were on Sunday school a long time ago, and now on leisure, that we have found in our congregation that if we team teach,
amen,
seventh and eighth graders, so there's four of us rotating about. Mm. Now originally they said, oh, that's bad for the kids and all kinds of things. But with four people teaching it, then you don't have to be chained to a teaching, and you can have all of your leisure, and yet they get a variety of teachers, and not maybe a continuity, but a kind of continuity within the individual in terms of teaching. And we found many more that are willing to teach on a team.
We have about a dozen who teach on a credit basis. We have our co-cacking program set up for the kids to take their different courses. They get a credit for each course. If one person comes in and teaches each course, this is just in a congregation of 500. It's very effectively because, you know, when you commit yourself from 6 to 12 weeks, and then you're through for a while.
Yeah, yeah, we
come in and teach it later, and you kids who want to pick it up later.
Very good.
That's pretty good.
In the middle of winter, I don't mind 5 weeks.
And they can spread it out over 5 or 6 years, and they can get the whole thing in less than 2 weeks.
Where do they get credits?
Who gives
the credits?
Sure. You mean that they get credit for teaching for that much period?
They have to have 20 credits.
The kids get credit.
I see what you mean.
The teachers teach a short course.
Nice.
Yeah. She's summer manager, and summer they come up to us part to teach a class. Mm-hmm. She signed up and she's teaching a weekday class that lasts 2.5 hours during the week. Mm-hmm. It only lasts 6 weeks. If it's a Sunday class, it only lasts an hour. They're teaching 12 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, science school teachers and parents and teachers were signed up until death do us part, we got pregnant. You know?
Yeah, that's